The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami on September 13th, 1992 in Vrindavan.
Most of you are coming to be in Vrindavan, and so inevitably we like to talk about Vrindavan, how to enter Vrindavan, what is Vrindavan, as much as we can all understand, and the practices of bhakti that we particularly take up in Vrindavan. And most of us partake in some way in these seminars also. Well, there are many things we can discuss. I thought a good place to start is about how to clean the heart of dirty things, because until we do that, we cannot do anything. We cannot actually enter the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, or hear properly. So, this is something we have to do. In the Leela of Lord Chaitanya, that is the pastime of the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. And it's actually a cleaning of the mandir by Lord Chaitanya and his followers in order that the deities of Lord Jagannath will have a clean temple. But at the same time, it's got this symbolical meaning that all the devotees are cleaning their hearts. And external cleanliness, external cleansing, sometimes can do that when you have the right mood. Madhavi, you told me the other day you were sweeping the courtyard at Vamsivat and felt this simultaneously cleaning the earth and cleaning the heart. So you can hardly imagine what a blissful festival that must have been. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells us, Lord Chaitanya asked the man in charge of affairs at Jagannath, who worked under the king, that I want to clean the Gundicha temple with my devotees. And the man said, you're exalted devotee, you're not fit to, you should not clean. But if you want, I'll do whatever you ask. So he gave him all the paraphernalia, many big jars of water and brooms. So, as I say, how they did it externally has got meaning for the internal cleansing. First, they all took brooms, and there are many rooms in the temple, and there's a courtyard, so they clean everything with the brooms. So when you first go in, there's all kinds of big dirt and balls of dust and even garbage objects may be there. So all this was cleaned in one thorough cleaning with brooms and put outside the temple. Then they went back in again, about 100 people or more, and Lord Chaitanya was leading them again with brooms. And this time they were more thorough to get the smaller pieces left. Second time. Then when it was cleaned twice like that, they were ready to wash it. So there are steps. You just throw water in a dirty place and you'll have mud. So after two cleansings, then they brought all the buckets. And described they were throwing water on the ceiling, and it was running down the walls and on the floor, and everyone was becoming very happy and at the same time working very hard. Lord Chaitanya's body was covered with dust and dirt. And then he started personally cleaning. They were cleaning with brooms with water, and then they were cleaning with their clothes and polishing the altar area and the floor area, getting thoroughly absorbed in it. And Lord Chaitanya had a competition, who will clean the most? He embarrassed those who didn't collect much dirt. He collected more dirt than anybody else. He reprimanded those who didn't collect very much. and they felt ashamed. And all the water was flowing, some of it was flowing off him, off his feet, and people were taking it and drinking it in secret. So in this way, it became all polished and pure and clean, ready for the Lord. So in the same way, when the heart is clean, can Krishna manifest. In our case, Krishna is already there. And he's not dirty, he's transcendental, even in the heart of the hog. But because the heart is dirty, Krishna doesn't manifest. There's no pure relationship, a loving relationship, although the two are coming together. The self doesn't have the capability of reciprocating with Krishna, even though he's present, except in some very basic way to get our material needs. Krishna reciprocates with us, he's so kind. But devotional reciprocation, we don't have the capacity, because we're dirty, to reciprocate with him. Example is given, the eyes don't have the capacity to reciprocate with the sun because they're too sensitive, they cannot receive it. But the other parts of the body can. So we have to develop that devotional ability. And that's generally called cleansing. Now there are many instructions about how to do this. What the dirty things are in our hearts. And of course these are very relevant. But somehow, even if we read them once or many times, it doesn't mean that by reading them they go away. Although that's possible. If somebody was very receptive, or if the person was very powerful. Narada Muni says, as a boy, that by once taking the prasadam, I felt of the great sages, Bhaktivedantas. I felt that my material coverings were eradicated. My devotional service manifests. But we may hear these things many times. Therefore, we have to apply, each one of us has to apply these practices. Know what the dirty things are in the heart. Take it seriously and try to make our hearts clean so that Krishna can appear. I'll read a few things from the scriptures because this is the only way we know to do this. There's nothing I can say to actually just take it out of your heart, but something we say or read may incline you to do it. You have to do it yourself. And it is certainly possible that at any one time in our life we may suddenly be able to grasp what is being taught as we weren't before, and in earnest take out these things once and for all. In first canto discussion, second chapter, two very important methods of cleansing are mentioned. This is in the one verse begins, Shrinbhatan Sakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Priyantak Stoi Vidrani Vidunoti Sritsitam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul, in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So this is a recommendation that cleaning will take place by chanting. Same thing is said in Chaita Dharpana Marjanam. Cleaning by the dirty mirror of the heart by chanting. But in the purport, Prabhupada says this, that Krishna is very kind. In this case, he personally does the cleaning, as he did in Gundicha. So Krishna, he says that, not that it will happen, but I will do it. Krishna in the heart will cleanse you. He's very happy when you take part in Shravanam Kirtanam. But Prabhupada says, Unfortunately, we have no taste for hearing and glorifying the Lord's names and activities. This is what I mean when I say that we've heard these instructions before, but we cannot take to them to make the heart clean. There has to be a quality to the hearing and chanting. And he says most people don't even have a taste to do it. For us, practicing devotees, our situation is a little different. We have a taste, we all have a strong inclination, a sense of duty to do it, to chant and to hear. But we don't have, when we do it, we don't feel relish or ras. But most people, they have no taste to do it at all. What? Chant Hare Krishna? But when we think each day, chant Hare Krishna, yes, of course. It's my life. But then we have the other lack of taste. So, in either case, how do you develop a taste? Prabhupada says, we've already discussed this, developing a taste for hearing and chanting the holy sound. It is done through the medium of service to the pure devotee of the Lord. So these are the two things mentioned here. That chanting will cleanse the heart, but we can't do anything unless we have a taste for it. So the taste will come by service. When we render various kinds of service to the spiritual master, to the following the order of parampara, then as a reward, we can use that word, or a reciprocation with Krishna, then we get a taste for the pure activity. This is also service, the pure service, primary service, shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smarana. If you don't do any service, and you chant, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service, there's something hollow to the chanting. One Vaishnava said, chanting without service is like shooting a gun without a bullet. So this connection is mentioned in the next verse in first canto. Nasta prai su abhadresu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naistaki. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. This is the dynamic combination, therefore. And Vrindavan gives us plenty of opportunity to do this, actually wherever we are. But in Vrindavan, it is very much available. Vaishnava save. And chanting and hearing. As to the particular things that the forms of dirt, as in the Gundicha, it's meant as sand, straw, and so many different kinds of things that may be there. So in the heart, there are many different anartas. And in books like Madhurya Kandimbini, they're analyzed very minutely, different things, psychological defects, wrong attitudes, are described. I'm not going to go over them now. You can read them, and they're helpful. That book particularly really surprises devotees. Oh, so many hundreds of years ago, he knew exactly what our problems were. They know the problems of the struggling devotees. But I picked out a few things, a few of this subtle but pernicious problems that occur that are also mentioned by Vaishnavas, who surprise us at how well they know us. This is in Manakshiksha, and particularly in the commentaries by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Raghunath Goswami, he's kindly for our benefit praying to his mind about different things that are preventing the mind from serving Krishna. And he mentions lust, which Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is the greatest enemy, like the personification of dirty things. trying to enjoy, play the enjoyer and in the form of sex desire of some kind. So he actually mentions six, anartas or dirty things: lust, anger, greed, illusion, arrogance, and envy, which are like robbers who attack the innocent jiva. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's recommendation briefly is again to associate with devotees as a means of getting relieved of these things. But now, in the next two verses, I call them subtle, meaning that to some degree, a devotee is supposed to overcome these sinful activities like illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication. That comes at initiation. But even if externally we're able to subdue these things, Dhanadhara Swami was talking in his class the other day of two stages of renunciation. One where you may have a taste still for the sinful activity, but you're able to control yourself from doing it. And the other stage where you actually have no taste for it. So, in the first stage, you have to be very careful. But still, one may have overcome these things, and yet still be guilty of some deep-rooted wrong attitudes that can spoil your chances for pure devotional service. There's Roman here. We're talking about how to get rid of dirty things in the heart. Come to the right place. So for the devotees, when we get to these subtle things, we're like really getting down to important factors. Not that these are only fine points. So here Raghunath Goswami mentions in verse 6, "My dear mind, you have embraced the path of self-realization, yet you foolishly think that you are cleansing yourself by bathing in the pretentiously fierce qualities of deceit and fault-finding." Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "This verse gives advice to those who have been able to subdue lust and anger, but have failed to vanquish the great enemy of deceit." Deceit. That's a word we don't really use so much. We can say cheating, hypocrisy. Who are we cheating? Who? We're deceiving ourselves and deceiving others. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will describe it. He mentions three kinds of devotees, three kinds of sadhakas, and then he tells how each of them practices this deceit. The three kinds are svanista, devoted to self-realization; parinishtita, dedicated to rules and regulations; and nirapeksha, detached. It's not so important for our purposes right now to know these differences, but just to hear the ways in which even, we could say, devotees who are seriously practicing are infested still. The svanista sadhaka becomes deceitful when he indulges in sense gratification in the name of satisfying the Supreme Lord. Oh, there are many ways that you can do this. Misuse your religious position. So deceit here means hypocrisy. By so many things that we do, by the way we dress, by our vocation, we proclaim ourselves as saintly persons, devotees of the Hare Krishna movement. So there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that. And whenever we misuse this position, this is kind of a hypocrisy, and it's not pleasing to Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada writes that it's better to be a sincere sweeper in the street than posing as a religionist who gets honor and is supposed to lead others, but doing all these hypocritical things. It's a demanding life that we are pursuing. And so hypocrisy is such a bad thing, and the stakes are high when you become a religionist, a devotee of Krishna conscious movement. We have to be very careful of this. But this other kind of devotee called Iparinistita, he's deceitful, but he makes an external show of strict adherence and dedication to spiritual life, but inwardly is attracted to material subjects completely unrelated to Krishna. And he prefers the association of the worldly-minded to saintly souls. Often these things, hypocritical activities are taken on in secret. People don't know. Therefore, a true sadhu, his life is not secret. It's open. I often think of the way Prabhupada lived in 26 Second Avenue in his room. It was an unusual design of the apartment, that it was a two-room apartment and then a little kitchenette. And the room where Prabhupada worked and slept had a window in the wall, which the window just led into the other apartment. And the devotees would mostly use this other room. They would type in there or paint in there and so on. So, but you could always look in the window and see Prabhupada. And even when he was sleeping, resting, we would sometimes see him in there. I remember from the first days that you always could see him. And so we should not develop this dark side where we do all things that people don't know about. Although there is such a thing as privacy and personal life, there should be persons, such as a spiritual master, with whom we reveal everything and tell everything, and try to improve our condition, even if they're a hypocritical act. Then this other kind of sadhaka, nirapeksha sadhaka, that's the renunciate. He considers himself to be a very elevated devotee, and exploits the renunciant's dress and status, looking down upon other devotees as if they were inferior. Because on and on, he's collecting wealth, he leaves the temple in order to collect money, and always anxious about that, covering his hypocrisy with shows of devotion, overly attached to his position and to the rules and regulations of the renounced order, and he forgets the main purpose of spiritual life, which is to develop attachment for Krishna. These traits are very detrimental to spiritual realization, and have been compared in this verse to the urine of the ass. So hypocrisy or deceit. We have to admit our actual position and try to improve from there. And not be pretentious. Now, in verse 7, he says, "My dear brother mine, the despicable desire for material honor and distinction is compared to a shameless and low-born prostitute who eats dog meat." Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "Hankering for honor is in fact a shameless prostitute who yearns to be worshipped. All other unwanted desires may be eradicated, but the hankering for honor and distinction is extremely difficult to uproot. It is like a seed which sprouts only later into a deceitful plant, a matrix from which all other anarthas stem. Thus it is called shameless, for it conveniently overlooks its own evil influence. Fame is like a dog, and one who runs after it is factually eating the flesh of a dog." Then again, he talks about the three kinds of sadhakas and how they harbor this desire. The svanista sadhika, he yearns for honor. He wants to be regarded as a highly religious person, as a generous person, or even as a sinless devotee. The parinistita sadhika, he desires acclaim as a great devotee with a clear spiritual understanding. He wants to be appreciated that he's detached from material life. So, actually we haven't attained these things, but we want honor for them. Even if we had attained them, we shouldn't want honor for them. Remember the example of Madhavendra Puri. He had attained such an exalted position that Chur Gopinath deity stole the condensed milk for him. And so the pujari, who was told this by the deity, went to the marketplace and said, where is Madhavendra Puri? Is a person named Madhavendra Puri here? You're very fortunate. The deity, Chur Gopinath, has stolen this milk for you. The Madhavendra Puri happily received it, but then he thought, oh, in the morning, everyone is going to come and praise me that this miracle occurred, you're such a great devotee. So he ran away from that place, although his reputation followed him. So, this is the real attitude that a person who actually has attained a great status has. But we, as part of our hypocrisy, we don't have that quality, yet we want that fame, we want that honor. This is not the same as wanting encouragement. We want encouragement, and we should encourage each other, but it should be done in a realistic way, a friendly way, not creating falsity. And therefore it is even said that people who intend to be our friends but who give us honor may actually be working against us, cause our fall down. The nirapeksha sadhaka or renunciate thinks that his honor lies in being considered pure and renounced, as having understood all the esoteric conclusions of the scriptures, as having mastered the science of devotion. So there's a kind of competition among the devotees not to receive praise. When you do something, someone may say, oh, you did this very nicely, you lectured nicely, you decorated nicely the deity or whatever. And we may have a chance to receive obeisances and so on. But at those times we have to be alert not to absorb the praise as, yes, this is due to me, thank you. But within and without, acknowledge that it's Krishna who should be praised, it's Prabhupada who should be praised. Otherwise this dirty thing will accumulate in the heart. More and more desire. It's like somebody is very greedy to eat, or wants money, or wants sex. These are the outward lusts, but this is another kind of lust. More, I want more, I want honor always. However, one is actually able to root out such deceits only in proportion to its having eradicated any desire for honor and distinction. So how to get rid of this? Again, serving the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, their food remnants, their dust of the lotus feet, and their sacred instructions have transcendental potency. And finally, here's a positive recommendation by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and that is the attitude of humility, which is works so well against all these things like hypocrisy and desire for honor. He writes, as soon as the jiva comes in contact with ignorance and nescience, he becomes dishonest, arrogant, yearns for worship and status, seeking deceitful ways and ever endeavoring in transient material activities. He thus distances himself from his original spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Just see, the difference between outward appearance and inner reality or actual reality. You could appear to others, even within a religious society, to be a leader, as has happened in our movement so often. Oh, this is a very big leader, that's a very big leader. But actually, he's distant from his original spiritual consciousness. Chanada pisanichinan turaiva sahishana. And how long can this go on before the reality finally emerges? But if that same unfortunate soul realizes that his true position is to feel himself humbler than even the straw in the street, and therefore develops the intelligence to respect others according to their positions, simultaneously taking complete shelter of the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then surely he will receive the mercy of Lord Krishna and concomitantly the grace of all the saintly personalities. So we started by saying the most active primary methods to clean the dirty heart are to chant and hear Shunvata Prakata Krishna and to serve Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, to serve the devotees, to help you to develop a taste in the cleansing process of chanting and hearing. And then as this goes on, there are so many particular anarthas but to deal with. But if we're humble, humility, you may not see how it's like, how it's a cleansing process, how it's a broom or how it's water in the Gundicha temple, just to be humble. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that at least the humble devotee won't be guilty of desiring honor. Always try to find the ways to behave in Janata peace and each other. Then we can chant, and when we chant, then we can clean the heart. If we are humble, then we can cry when we chant. And so many things will come. You may say, strictly speaking, humility is not itself love of Krishna. It's a preliminary thing, but it's such an important preliminary thing. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya, who wants us to attain Krishna prema as the goal, says that this verse, Trinadapi, should be worn around the neck for those who want to attain Krishna bhakti. We'll also be humble enough to take lessons from devotees, which will help us to remove unwanted things. I'm not proud that no one can tell us anything. So as I said in the beginning, we hear these instructions and still we have the anarthas. There's this art of application. It cannot exactly be taught like a mechanical thing, or it certainly cannot be done for you. But so many directions and hints can be given when we associate with the devotees or read the purports. But because of free will, even Krishna leaves it up to us. We should become aware of this responsibility and difficulty of actually applying the sacred and potent instructions. And lo and behold, one day we can do it. We can just pick up the instructions of the saintly persons and apply them. And then they'll work marvelously. All right, so we can have some discussion. Anything anyone wants to discuss or ask from what I was saying?
You were saying that the first instruction is to chant to hear, and then you said service. Then you're chanting a various service, but you're making a distinction here between practical service.
Yeah, I think you. I don't know if you were here when I read that line from the purport to Shrin Bhattas Vakatel Krishna. Prabhupada says people aren't interested in hearing and chanting because they have no taste. We have already discussed how to develop a taste for hearing and chanting the holy sound. It is done through the medium of service to the pure devotee of the Lord. So I was making a distinction that thinking of all the services our spiritual master gives us, and as we do them, that we become qualified for having a taste of chanting. Sure, chanting is itself service, but by doing service with the body, mind, so many services, that qualifies us. Preaching activities, laborious services, then you become more qualified to have a taste for chanting. I wasn't making a distinction that one is service and the other isn't, but there's a secret. Just like we may want to hear very advanced topics of the love pastimes between Radha and Krishna, but if you don't have a foundation of service to Guru, which service is not its, may not itself be only hearing about Radha and Krishna, then you won't be able to have it. You won't be qualified to be purified to hear about Radha and Krishna. So you have to do everything. Or another way to say it, as Prabhupada did, was if you attempt to only chant and hear in a secluded place, you won't be able to do that. You'll sleep and think of sex. Because we have to be active in so many ways, especially in our stage of life. So serve other service, if you want to use the word other, must be done. Balanced program. Nasta prayasu abhadreshu. By attending the Bhagavatam class and rendering service. So that means some other service other than hearing the Bhagavatam. If you say that you only hear the Bhagavatam, if you could, then that would be very nice.
That after so many years of chanting, still the anartha is still in the heart.
So what's the question? Why are
Krishna
they
still... Krishna must respond positively to the chanting of the devotees to get purified, but still after so many years and devotee struggling with his anartha.
Well, even that so many years, how many so many is it? 20, 30, we think it's so much. But how many years were we not chanting? How many lives? It's not that we have been chanting for so long that there appears to be something wrong with the process, that we've been not... There is something wrong with ourselves and with our practice. So, therefore we say, after so many years, why? But perhaps we have to, accept patiently that whether you consider it many years or not so many years, I still, after a certain amount of practice, I haven't advanced. So I have to keep doing it, that's all. And try to find out, not just keep doing it, be willing to investigate the situation and say, it may be, although I don't want to, I hope this isn't a fact, but I may have to admit it, that I may have to go right all the way back to the beginning. I may be doing something really improperly or have some really big anarthism. Therefore, I'm not getting results from this devotional service. But I want to get the results. It's not too late, even in this lifetime, to make some major corrections. So let me do it. Let me humble myself, approach the person who will tell me the truth, and work on some corrections. Really improve my life. Yes, because that is the direct implication. It's mentioned in some of the purports that if you chant and you're not feeling the ecstatic symptoms, it must be due to offenses. So then what is that? Your question is, what if after so many years I still have an artist? What is the question? Why? The answer is because we have still offenses. Or if the question is, it doesn't seem right that after so much performance there should still not be result, at least the question shouldn't imply something wrong with the process. I got a letter from one devotee, initiated devotee. He'd been practicing maybe 4 or 5 years. He said, I don't have a taste, now I'm going to give this up. I'm going to practice Christianity because I don't get a taste. So I said, well, Christianity, you have the same thing. If you practice prayer, you have, it's a long road to attain perfection in any religious path. So if this was your criteria, then after a few years, you'll quit that too. We do have a taste, but it's a kind of indication of our desiring more taste that we feel anxious for that nectar, the nectar for which we're always anxious. If we didn't have a taste, we'd be out trying the material varieties of taste. So we should be encouraged that we are tasting. But the wonderful things we hear, a pure devotee taste, that we have to wait for patiently and try sincerely to attain.
Devotional practices, and then one's focus. There's a change between just practicing and following the orders of the spiritual master, then one enters the stage of anuttanavritti, and devotional practice becomes more internalized, and there's more focus, at least from my understanding, on self-analysis. And so I was wondering, you were describing how hearing and chanting and cultivating humility in Vaishnava Seva can also be seen as rooms and water to cleanse the heart. But then there's also this side of internalization and self-analysis. And sometimes it seems like it's a very crucial aspect. And also that sometimes it's seen as something fearful or painful and discouraging. And I was wondering if you could...
You mean by self-analysis that an individual actually tries to understand what are my anarthas and how to get rid of them? Yeah, that question always comes up. Another way to put that question is where we often hear it is it enough to just practice the bhakti yoga? Will that remove the anarthas, or do we separately have to know what they are and work on them? Sometimes the shastras say, or the acharyas say, you don't have to separately work on them. And sometimes they say you do. Well, certainly we do have to have self-analysis. I found a nice statement advocating that by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I think it's in this Chaitanya. What is it? Shikshastakam? Yeah. He advocates that you should practice self-examination. And if you don't do this, you will not be able to advance. One can regularly do this and see his progress. So the introspection is part of a devotee's life. To know, because people, they may not tell us, or even if they tell us, we will not hear them. So we have to try to develop some introspective powers to know what are our, quote, favorite, unquote, anarthas, what are the things that we really have to work on. So that has to be done. In addition to the purifying, so that we can direct the purifying activities. For example, that which I'm weak in, I try to strengthen myself. I give attention to. I try to overcome. I have a tendency to be angry, especially. Or especially to be lusty, or especially to be lazy.